Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is the Gist of Freedom.
Hello.
Hello, Mayor Floyd.
Mayor Floyd. Yes, I'm on. And Ms. Shirley Satterfield.
Hello. Hi. Is Mr. R. Lee Gordon on the line?
I am. Good evening to
okay.
all.
Thank you.
Good
Hello.
Evening, Mr. Gordon.
Hello, Mr. Gordon.
Good evening, Mr. Floyd and Ms. Satterfield. How's everyone today?
Fine,
we're up and
you.
About.
Good, good. Well, we want to thank you, firstly, for taking the time to be on the show with us. We also want to thank our listeners who know that this is a weekly online discussion that celebrates the African-American experience and honors all the people, past, present, white, and black, who are preserving and sharing our history through literature, the arts, and craftsmanship. And we're very excited to have both of you on. We're going to talk a little bit tonight about the black communities in Princeton, New Jersey. And you are, Mr. Witherspoon, a former mayor of Princeton. And if you'd be so kind, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about the history of the city?
Thank you. I will. It's Jim Floyd, the former mayor of Princeton Township. Your listeners should be aware that there are actually two Princeton municipalities, Princeton Township and Princeton Borough. Actually, Princeton itself was founded back in 1696, and as you can imagine, it had some name changes. It was originally, strangely enough, called Stony Brook after a stream that's pretty close to the community. And then in 1724, the name was changed to Princetown. And its popularity, as your listeners can well imagine, is grew out of the fact that the College of New Jersey, which is now Princeton University, was located in Princeton. And the Quakers were the folk who really were the forward-thinking people in Princeton. In 1730, they addressed the question of slavery, and then there were iterations that took place over the years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also want to share with our listeners, too, that they can visit the slideshow on Blog Talk Radio, theantiqueeshow.com, where they can see some visuals, some images of Princeton and have a greater sense of familiarity with what we're discussing. Mr. Floyd, go ahead and continue what you were talking about in terms of your family's history and what was your relationship beyond being the mayor with the city of Princeton.
I'm going to defer to Shirley very shortly. I'm a transplant, so to speak. I came to Princeton in 1946. However, my deceased wife was a native Princetonian, and my entering into the social and civic environment in Princeton was the result of the conditions as I saw them that were almost a continuation of oppressive from the standpoint of the job opportunities, housing, and other. Probably Shirley can give you a little better and a little more intimate background. Her family was here long before I came to Princeton. Shirley, why don't you speak to Mr. Gordon on that?
Oh, hello, Mr. Gordon. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, and thank you so much for joining us, Sally.
You're welcome. Yes, my family's been here for six generations, and I'm actually the historian for the African-American community, and I do have a website on the African-American community that I did with a girls' group that I had when I was a guidance counselor at Princeton University. Mm-hmm. I mean, Princeton High School. not Princeton University. What would you like me to tell you about the African-Americans here at Princeton?
Yes, let's talk a little bit about the community or the African-American community in Princeton. I don't think too many people know about it. Can you share a little bit of information about that?
Uh-huh. The African-American community in Princeton has been a vital community presence for over 200 years. The presence of African-Americans in Princeton dates back to the 18th century when they came here as slaves on large farms. They were agricultural and domestic servants. There were also free blacks who came here who migrated from the South for employment at the university. The employment opportunities developed as Princeton University grew. And in this, most of the African-Americans lived in what is called the Witherspoon-Jackson community because our community started at a street that was called Jackson Street that was part of our urban renewal that was removed for a thoroughfare. And most of the laborers in Princeton, not only African-Americans but also Italians, lived in this area because Italians came as stonecutters for the university. But the African-Americans who came here were laborers. They were cooks, waiters, caregivers. They did many domestic jobs. They were also doctors and lawyers. So we have a multitude of a variety of occupations and people in this community. But most had come as slaves. Some came as servants to students at the university.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the Witherspoon street name. Who is John Witherspoon, and what was his relationship with Princeton?
John Witherspoon was the sixth president of Princeton University, and he came here, and at that time when he came, there was only one building at Princeton University, which was Nassau Hall. And Nassau Hall was built for the university students who came. Actually, it started as the College of New Jersey in Elizabeth. And Aaron Burr brought the students here to Princeton in 1756. And that's when the university started. And the sixth president was John Witherspoon, who was also a minister. So he not only, he taught all of the courses except math because he didn't know math, so he had another professor to teach the math. But he came here to Princeton, and his home was at an area called Tusculum, which was on Valley Road, so he would come down Valley Road and up Witherspoon to Nassau to teach his courses and also to minister to the students.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where, pardon me?
Was he also an abolitionist?
I'm sorry?
Yes, he was very much in the abolitionist movement, and quite frankly, he was somewhat revered in the community. And his name is still somewhat revered. There's a very large statue on campus now. Of course, that statue is much in contrast to the early days at Princeton when, as Shirley mentioned, some of the students came and brought their slaves with them and lived with them, quite frankly. And, of course, the Princeton University has a history they certainly aren't proud of. And Woodrow Wilson, who was president, as you can imagine, out of Virginia, Woodrow Wilson really perpetuated and continued not only the strong Southern ties, but also the segregated atmosphere. He was diametrically opposed to any blacks entering Princeton. And Woodrow Wilson, of course, went on to become, fortunately, unfortunately, the president of the United States and others. But Shirley's description of Witherspoon Street and your query is most apt because it was there where most of the slaves, when they were free people, also mm-hmm. settled on Witherspoon Street. At one time, it was called African Alley.
We didn't give it that name.
No, we didn't give it that name.
Now, also, if I'm not mistaken, John Witherspoon also taught former slaves, and according to our producer, even help one to graduate from Princeton University. Would either of you like to speak to that?
There's some question about that actual graduation. One thing you must keep in mind, and your listeners, the university and the seminary, Princeton Theological Seminary, worked very closely together. In fact, they exchanged professors. So there are some who would allege that maybe the early graduate who happened to be African-American may have been out of the seminary relationship between the seminary and the university. However, there is the name of Chavez. And Shirley, do you remember any of the others?
Matthew Anderson,
yes.
who started the Berean Church in Philadelphia, who was a friend of Paul Robeson's father, William Drew Robeson, who was a minister at our church.
Well, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you both. How did the Witherspoon Church come to fruition? Did the African-Americans in Princeton initiate it, or was it more of a Jim Crow initiative?
No, it was an after effect of an incident. The African-Americans worshipped at the First Presbyterian Church, which still exists. However, it's now called Nassau Presbyterian Church. And most of the worshipers, African-American worshipers, were servants to or maybe free folk who had worked for these folk as slaves. And, of course, they sat in the balcony. Well, on a 4th of July celebration, and in those days they used to celebrate by shooting off rockets, and a rocket landed on that wood shingle roof of the First Presbyterian Church and burned it to the ground. And as you know, Presbyterians do things decently and in order, so there was a worship that was carried on by the white parishioners at the seminary, which is virtually next door, mm-hmm. and the African-Americans, Shirley, where did we go?
They worshipped at a place of their own. We have four African-American churches in our community, and Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church is the second oldest, and most of the churches started in homes. So we were called colored then, so most of the colored parishioners had already started worshiping in homes on Witherspoon Street and in the Witherspoon Jackson community. And mm-hmm. in 1837, a building was built for our church, and we were actually called the First Presbyterian Church of Color until 1848, when it was changed to Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church. So African Americans had already started worshiping in homes before the fire, but most of them were dismissed after the fire and started a church of their own.
I see. And just so that our listeners know, they can, again, visit blogtalkradio.com, the Antique E-Show. There are some great images, photos of the show, and they can actually go to YouTube, where we have a channel for the Gist of Freedom, and learn a little bit more about this as well. And even our next topic, which I'd like to discuss, is Paul Robeson's dad, because he was an active figure in Princeton, correct? And he was also
yes,
a minister, if I'm not mistaken.
He was the minister at Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church. William Drew Robeson was his full name. Mm-hmm. And not only was he an active minister, but he was also active in the community. In fact, the story goes that he was maybe overactive, and in the minds of some, was probably going to be a future problem. However, Reverend Robeson was, I guess, kind of the unofficial voice for the community in many cases, and I think that one of the big falling outs was the fact that Woodrow Wilson, when he was president of Princeton, ostensibly relied on Reverend Robeson for his contacts, and when Reverend Robeson approached him about the possibility of one of Paul's older brothers going to Princeton, you can imagine what the reaction was. Shirley, you may want to add something about Reverend Robeson.
Yeah, well, Reverend Robeson was our minister from 1880 to 1901, and he was dismissed in 1901, and there are no records actually to say why he was dismissed, but it's surmised that he was dismissed because of his work to end Jim Crowism, because we were a very segregated town. And that's one of the reasons why Paul was so soured against Princeton, because of the way his father was treated. And being a minister and also fighting for human rights, he wasn't looked upon very favorably by the presbytery. So he was dismissed from our church because of his work for getting rid of Jim Crowism. So in 1901, he was dismissed from our church, and he became an ashman, which is basically a garbage man, and that's how he worked to keep his family going. But by that time, his wife had passed as a result of a burn. She was tending the stove, and the coals hit got hold of her garment and caught on fire, so she died as a result of the burns. And his siblings were away at school, so he was left with his father, and he and his father, Reverend Robeson, bonded. They were home together, and they were, you know, they would play chess together, and he was also, Paul Robeson was also taken care of by his relatives, because he had cousins and aunts and uncles who had come from the South while he was here in Princeton. And in 1907, his father left Princeton and went to Westfield, and Paul stayed back for a while with his relatives until his father established a church. And whether or not it was because he was soured against what happened to him as a Presbyterian, he became a Methodist minister. So he started a Methodist church in Westfield and then again in Somerville. And that's where you hear a lot about Paul in Somerville, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Somerville High School and then went on to Rutgers.
Right, where he also graduated as a valedictorian, spoke
exactly
as many as 25 languages. Now, what was the Princeton's demographic during the inception of the church, and how does it compare with the present population?
There were many African Americans here. Well, right, I think there were more then than there are now in our community. Our community is very diverse at this time. It was a time when you would come from Wigan Street, or Jackson Street, to Birch Avenue, and mostly see colored people. Now it is a very diverse community, and mostly people who are laborers. So we have many Latinos and also Caucasians who have moved into our area because they want to live in Princeton, and because Princeton's so expensive to live in, they can live in our area for less. But it's also caused problems for those of us whose families have moved out and we can't afford to stay because it's too expensive.
And I think it should be added, there's some measure of diversity in the other communities. I said some measure, it's almost minuscule, but some African-Americans, and primarily those who relocated in the Princeton area when corporations relocated, had an opportunity, that's in quotes, to move outside of the area because there was just no housing in the area. And so that while there, Shirley's absolutely right, the population has diminished. And even with the addition of folk who are outside of the John Witherspoon or Witherspoon-Jackson area, it's still a diminishing population, and there aren't that many who are really outside of the Witherspoon-Jackson area.
There, two things come to mind. Firstly, Shirley, you mentioned a website that talks a little bit more about the history of Princeton and the Witherspoon Street community. Can you share with our listeners that website address, please?
I really don't know the address, but I can tell you how you can get to it. If you Google,
well, let's do that.
Okay. If you Google Princeton Public Library and then go into African American Community, you will see an acronym. It's PULSE, P-U-L-S-E. That was my girls group. If you click on to PULSE, it will come up with all the information of the African American community. It'll give you the businesses, the places of worship, the important people at that time. So it's in categories. So you can get the information from there.
Okay, great.
But unfortunately, I don't know the website. I'm just. Or you could just Google PULSE or African American History in Princeton.
Okay. And some of this information is included on the slideshow. Again, that's on blogtalkradio.com, the Antique E Show. So our listeners have access to get this information. Now let's go back to you, Mr. Floyd, as the former mayor. Firstly, were you the first black mayor of Princeton?
Yes, that was a privilege that was extended to me. And I was the first black elected to Princeton Township Committee. I emphasize the township because of the fact that there are two municipalities. We're calling now, or talking with you now, from the township, which is about 3 minutes from Shirley's house, and she's virtually in the middle of the borough. But yes, I had the good fortune of being selected as mayor in Princeton Township.
Okay. Well, we actually have a caller, so let's take this call, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about your role as the mayor of Princeton Township. And then I'd like to talk about anything that you might have extended during your mayoral position in terms of making sure that we retained the history of Princeton and the Witherspoon Street community. Let's get this caller on the line. You're listening to the Gist of Freedom is Faith radio show. Thank you for joining us. Please go ahead with your name, comments, or question. Hello? Okay, well, nobody's there. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue our conversation, and I'm sure if someone wants to call in, they will do so. That call-in number is area code 347-324-5552. Again, 347-324-5552. And if you're just joining us, we have the distinct honor of talking with Jim Floyd, a former mayor of Princeton, as well as a local historian and a good friend of his, I'm assuming, Shirley Satterfield, who is also a historian. Thank you both again for joining us. Now let's talk about some of the things that you may have done as mayor to preserve the legacy and history of the Witherspoon Street community.
Well, actually, in fact, I'd have to harken back to my campaign. I ran with a very dear friend of mine who just happened to be Caucasian, and both of us were on the same page when it came to those things that we felt we wanted to try to do something about. As you can imagine, and I think we've intimated, Princeton really was bereft with discrimination. Housing, job opportunities, and actually, we'd just come off what was known as the Princeton Plan to integrate our school system. So the things that we ran on, a civil rights commission, open occupancy housing, and, of course, job opportunities, were the things that we tried to implement when we were had the privilege of serving as mayor. And to some extent, it not only brought about some changes in the discriminatory patterns, but also there were groups that came together and, for instance, built open occupancy housing and built some moderate and affordable income housing. To the extent that we were able to, the municipal positions We enjoyed the privilege of not only appointing some people, but changing the patterns of hiring that had been in place. It was during that period also that our school system was really having problems in their minds with recruiting, and we've heard that so many times before, but we did get some African-American principals. Now, we had, with the Princeton plan, the inclusion of the teachers who had taught in the all-black school. They became part of the system. However, they weren't totally integrated into the system. So there was some measure of change that we were able to bring about. And we looked, not only did we include, of course, the diversity from the standpoint of racial and ethnic opportunities, but we also had the opportunity to appoint some young people to our boards and commissions. We're very proud of
that. I believe I'm sorry for cutting you off, Mr. Floyd. I do believe we have a caller on the line, area code 347. If you have a comment or question for Mr. Floyd or Ms. Satterfield, please go ahead. 347, you're on the air. Okay, well, while we all know that technology can be as fickle as kinfolk, we're going to continue. What I'd like to know is, let's talk a little bit about you becoming the first elected black mayor of Princeton, because that must have been quite a journey as well. What were some of the things that you did prior to becoming mayor, and how did you come about being the first mayor of Princeton?
Well, quite frankly, we were very much involved in the housing efforts in Princeton. It came about primarily because when my deceased wife and I went looking for a house in Princeton, we were taken about 7 miles outside of Princeton. So we knew then that that was something that we would have an interest in trying to correct. We were very active in Princeton Association for Human Rights, which was kind of an umbrella organization with a number of not only our African-American friends, but many members of the faith-based institutions in town, and some members, strangely enough, of the university. So that our activities centered around the things that I mentioned earlier, job opportunities, housing opportunities, and we, not only did we, I was part of the group that built some open occupancy housing in Princeton, but also a charter trustee of the group that we built 4 complexes that are affordable and in some instances low income, but were able to provide housing. And in those times, actually the constituency was as diverse as teachers and policemen and firemen and others who needed a place to live. So it was not only an opportunity for our African-American neighbors, but for those whose income would qualify them. So we enjoyed what we did, and it was an inclusionary thing. And we even had students from the university who were very active with us in the community.
Sure. And, you know, this is one of a very exciting thing that I didn't know was Albert Einstein, who was a fellow Princetonian, was also involved in some political activities with Robeson, and there was actually a march to President Truman's office to campaign for the passage of anti-lynching legislation. Can either or both of you talk a little bit about this particular...
Shirley can speak very directly to that because her relative might have had a relationship with Einstein. Shirley?
Take it away, Shirley.
Not only was it Paul Robeson and Einstein, it was also W.B. Du Bois who went to meet with Truman.
Wow.
Yeah, and Einstein, when he lived in Princeton, would often come in our community and sit on our porches because he knew what it was like to live in a segregated town. My mother worked at the Institute for Advanced Study when Einstein was there, and Einstein often took me for walks. Of course, being very little at that time, I didn't know who he was. I just thought it was this nice man with all of his hair. But he had a quite a relationship with the people in our community. And actually, there's a book that's written by Fred Jerome and Roger Taylor. It's called Einstein, Race and Racism. And it has a lot of our community people in it. In fact, they were interviewed at my home who talk about their relationship with Einstein.
And there's I'm told of an incident when you certainly recall when Marian Anderson was denied the opportunity to sing at the DAR hall down in Washington. I'm told that Einstein even offered Marian Anderson housing when she came to sing in Princeton. Mm-hmm. Perchance that was a problem. She did come and she sang in Princeton. Was it at MacArthur's, really?
It was at the MacArthur Theater.
At the MacArthur mm-hmm. Theater, which is our local theater on the university campus. And Einstein had that kind of relationship generically with our African-American neighbors and the cause.
May I say something about the Princeton plan? Jim had mentioned about the Princeton plan. The Princeton plan was – do I have time to mention that?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Fascinating.
When I was going through school, I actually went to the School for Colored Children. There, we had a lot of everything was colored. The Y was colored. The cemetery is colored. We have our cemetery is segregated. And there were places on Nassau Street that we couldn't go to, establishments, restaurants, and stores that we couldn't go in. So we had in our community houses that had candy stores or ice cream parlors. So all of our shopping and everything that we did was in our community between Jackson Street and Birch Avenue. So I didn't even know what segregation was until they integrated the schools. When I was in third grade, they had the Princeton plan. I was at the School for Colored Children, Witherspoon School for Colored Children. And when they initiated the Princeton plan, it was because Governor Driscoll of New Jersey wanted to desegregate all of the schools in the state of New Jersey. This was in 1947. So
okay.
In 1948, Princeton, the PTA and the Board of Education got together and said that the schools in the borough, the Witherspoon School for Colored Children and Nassau Street School where the white children went, would be integrated. So when I started third grade, I went to Nassau Street School, which was then kindergarten through eighth grade for all of the children in the borough of Princeton. And the school that I went to that was the Witherspoon School for Colored Children became the middle school. We called it junior high school then for all of the schools in the borough from sixth through eighth grade. Now, the problem with that was that we had caring teachers, and we had students who were learning Greek and Latin and learning about our culture, and we had teachers who were in the community. And we had students who could go to Princeton University, but because they weren't accepting them, the men went to Lincoln, and Lincoln University was then called the Black Princeton. So when
okay.
I was So when they integrated the schools, that's when I found out what segregation was, because even though they integrated the schools, the teachers were not sensitive, and the teachers would still separate us in school, and our education went down. So it wasn't, you know, our education was much different when they integrated the schools than it was
yes.
when we went to all segregated schools.
Mr.
And
Floyd, would you like to? I'm sorry, Shirley.
Extended,
Mr. Floyd. Was
yep.
this also your experience, too, as growing up?
I came here at the beginning of the Princeton plan. So I didn't go to the Princeton school system. I went
okay.
to the school system in Trenton, but I'm certainly aware of the situation that Shirley refers to. And, excuse me, many of the young folk in Princeton, many more went to college then than are going to
That's
college
right.
now.
Yeah.
We had that kind of situation where you had a teacher who was sat next to you in the pew in church, and they knew you quite well. They were in the same social organization, the same YMCA, et cetera, YWCA. So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting that we talk about the fact that even with integration, the quality of education for a lot of African American students declined. I've talked about this on several other radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
But what advice do you have for educators in terms of how to ensure that even in an integrated classroom setting, our children still believe, achieve, and succeed?
Well, the bit of advice I have isn't necessarily for the educators, it's for the parents. And quite frankly, we parents, I've found, because I've served on a minority education committee here in Princeton, and the most difficult thing is to get parents to not necessarily have to be in PTOs or PTAs, but be involved and learn
Take
about
it. Take a vested interest. Yeah, I use the analogy that it really does start at home, but that's not the case anymore. It's not starting in enough homes, and it's not, you know, in many ways we expect schools to be parents, and we have to move away from that mentality because, you know, if there is good parenting in the home, if there is a parent or parents in the home who can ensure that a young person is getting the education that school is supposed to provide, then that's how we're going to ensure more successes.
That's absolutely key, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, now we're going back into neighborhood schools, and that's a whole other subject. I'm concerned about that as well. But let's talk about integrated Sunday schools, the teacher, Betsy Stockton, and slave children who didn't have parents, and they still learn.
Shirley is really an expert on the Betsy Stockton scene.
Not too much an expert.
And in this area, she certainly has gathered a lot of data. In fact, to Shirley's credit, they've just put an appropriate plaque in front of our church, Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church, commemorating Betsy. And Shirley oversaw the installation of that. Shirley, why don't you talk a little about Betsy Stockton?
Okay. Betsy Stockton was a slave who was born in Princeton. She was referred to as a light woman of color or a mulatto. Her father was white and her mother was African-American, and she was raised in the household of Robert Stockton, who was a cousin of Richard Stockton, who signed the Declaration of Independence. They don't have any record of her birth or her marriage or her baptism, but they think that she was born around 1798. And she did live here in Princeton for a while, and then she went to Woodbury, New Jersey, with a Reverend Nathaniel Todd. But she also was with Ashbel Green, who was one of the presidents of Princeton University. She was sold to the Stewart family, and Mr. and Mrs. Stewart went to the Hawaiian Islands, and Betsy went along with them as a missionary. And she taught the children in the Hawaiian Islands, and then Mrs. Stewart had gotten ill. So they came back to Princeton, and when they came back to Princeton, that's when Betsy did some learning at Princeton Theological Seminary, and she started a Sabbath school for the colored children through the First Presbyterian Church, which is now Nassau Presbyterian. And she also was one of the first teachers to teach the children in the School for Colored Children. And she started a Sabbath school at Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church. We do have a window that's dedicated to her. There's a plaque that's dedicated to her that's in our church. And there's an organization, Historical Preservation of New Jersey. And they had asked if they could put a plaque in front of our church because Betsy Stockton is one of the women who is on the Women's Historical Trail of New Jersey. So we do have a plaque in honor of Betsy Stockton. In 1990, we celebrated our 150th year at Witherspoon, and there was a portrait that was commissioned that is hanging in the Princeton Theological Seminary, and it's also on the plaque that was dedicated to her that's in front of our church.
Fascinating. And I just wanted to let our listeners know that my producer is chiming in that the first three children were orphans and whose parents were either still enslaved or killed during the Civil War. And that we put too much blame on parents, and we as a community don't take care of our children in the manner that we did back then and the manner that we took care of these newly offered freed slave children. And so this, too, is, you know, when we talk about it being at the home, if it's not starting at home, then we as a community, very much like we did in the past, need to take a vested interest in the success of our children, and that's something that we don't see enough of.
Okay,
you're absolutely
right. This is what you're talking about previously to when I was talking about Betsy Stockton.
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, and also another thing is that we have parents who start at teenagers, and when you have teenagers who are growing up and also trying to take care of children, they, you know, they don't have the skills to take care of the children, so by the time they're in school, they're still trying to grow up, and they're not paying attention to their children.
That's right. That's right. And a child, you know, ideally should be learning from an educated parent or a parent who knows how to be a parent, and that's also one of the things that's remiss in too many of our communities.
Right. Well, I was
a guidance
counselor at Hightstown and Princeton High Schools, and I saw that a lot, you know, where and actually I was counseling students whose parents were my students at one time.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And so let's talk a little bit about what monuments, what historical buildings, landmarks are still in Princeton if someone wants to take a journey down.
Okay. I do the walking tour. I'm the vice president of the Historical Society of Princeton, and
mm-hmm.
I started a walking tour of the African-American community because they always had tours, but they always stopped at Wigan Street, which actually starts at the end of Wigan Street, starts the African-American community. And I said, well, you know, there's a lot of history in our community. So I did start a walking tour and started a slide presentation, and I call him my history partner. There's a man whose name was Albert Hines, who died at 104, and he knew everything about Princeton. So he was my history partner. But if you start at where the library is in Princeton, there's the Albert E. Hines Plaza that Mr. Floyd and I had named after Mr. Hines. If you cross the street, there's Griggs Corner, and Jim will tell you more about who Mr. Griggs is. If you come down with the Spoon Street, the next corner where Jackson Street used to be, which is Paul Robeson Place, there's
mm-hmm.
a statue of Paul Robeson in front of the Paul Robeson Center, which is the Arts Council of Princeton.
And again, I encourage our listeners to visit blogtalkradio.com, the Antique E-Show. There are some fabulous photos of tonight's subjects. We have now. Shirley, did you provide these photos? Because they're wonderful.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
And there's even a beautiful photo. There's
down?
Even a beautiful photo of you. So.
Of me?
Yes. Yeah. I believe you're in one of these photos, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
I'm
going to keep on going down Witherspoon Street because the next block there's Paul Robeson's house, the house where he was born. The next block is Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church, which is the second oldest church. The next block is Mount Pisgah AME Methodist Church, which is the first African-American church. Across the street from that is the first school for colored children, which is now an apartment building. And across the street is where our mayor lives, the mayor of Princeton Borough, who is a black woman. And there's also the entrance to the colored cemetery, because the cemetery is owned by Nassau Presbyterian Church. That was given, it was land given to them by Mr. Wiggins, who was a minister. He owned land, and in 1757, he gave that land to the first church as for a cemetery. So the first area of the cemetery is known as the historical area. That's where many of the presidents at Princeton University are buried. And then there is a colored section of the cemetery where our relatives are buried.
You're no longer mandated in that section. However,
right.
That section actually, they took some houses that were occupied by African Americans early on and extended the cemetery and said, this is where you will be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting dichotomy when you think about, you know, even in life or death in those days. And up until very recently, that was the designated area.
Mm-hmm. But I do have
Shirley, if anyone wants to potentially take this walking tour, do you want to provide either a website address or a phone number that they can contact you or email address?
They can, you know, I don't have phone numbers or emails, but I can tell you, if they Google the Historical Society of Princeton or
mm-hmm.
call the Historical Society of Princeton, which is located on Nassau Street, and ask for the Albert E. Hines Memorial Walking Tour, All they have to do is say, I would like to take the tour. They give the date. The Historical Society lets me know, and then I will take them on the tour. And I not only talk about the African-American experience, I also go through the university where it started as Nassau Hall, from Nassau Hall.
And before we wrap up, I want to talk a little bit about Michelle Riley Cook with both of you. Shirley?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Can we talk a little bit about Michelle Riley Cook?
Who's Michelle Riley Cook?
I don't recognize the name, unfortunately, either.
Shirley, okay. Well, my producer has asked that we talk about this, but let's sort of move on.
Could you tell us who is Michelle Riley Cook?
Well, we'll have to check with my producer. So while she's getting back to me, we will move on. And so if someone were to visit Princeton today, again, what are some of the historical sites that they should visit? Can you just share a few of those with us?
You mean sites other than in the African-American community?
No, well, primarily in, you know, having to do with the Witherspoon Street community.
Oh, well, I kind of named a lot of them.
The
Albert E. Hines Plaza, which is next to the public library, Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church, the Arts Council, Paul Robeson Center for the Arts, the Paul Robeson House, the burial grounds of William Drew Robeson, who was our minister. He and his wife are the only African Americans buried in the historical white section of the cemetery. The four churches, the four African American churches in Princeton. There are three fraternal organizations in Princeton. What else, Jim? I'm trying to think.
Around the Elks, the Masons, and even outside of the Witherspoon Jackson area that Shirley's described, and takes you on a walking tour. It's almost imperative that you stop and look at Nassau Hall, which is at the top of Witherspoon Street, virtually. There's kind of a strange dichotomy. If you're at the foot of Witherspoon Street, the Birch Avenue area that Shirley described, you can't even see Nassau Hall. But there it is in all of its revolutionary glory, and still there, and still probably the most revered building in town. Except for those of us who are in the African-American neighborhood, and we look to the School for Colored and our churches as being revered buildings, and Paul Robeson's place of birth.
And also where the Arts Council of Princeton is, their adjoining building was our Colored Y. So they have history in the building about the beginnings of the Colored Y. There's also Albert Einstein's house. There's the battlefield where Washington and his troops fought at the Battle of Mercer. Trying to think of what else. And also there were establishments beyond the African-American community that African-Americans owned, such as Spring Street, where there was a man whose name was William Moore, and he actually owned buildings on Witherspoon Street, and there is a plaque that's dedicated to his daughter, Christine Moore Howell, who had a beauty parlor.
And his grandson still owns
his grandson
building.
So there's a lot of
I would like to thank both of you for joining us tonight. This has been a fascinating show. Again, it's really important, I think, that we share and preserve our history, and it's through conversations and good souls like you that we're able to do that. And so I'd personally like to thank both of you for being our very special guests on the Gist of Freedom is Faith radio show. Well, both
thank
of you.
You. We invite you and all your listeners to come to Princeton.
Okay, we certainly will. And
good.
Thank you again for being a vital part of the progress, again, in preserving and sharing our history. You've been listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show produced by Leslie Gist Etheridge. We air Thursday and Sunday nights on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Arlie Gordon. It is indeed my pleasure to host this show, and we hope that you will join us for future episodes of The Gist of Freedom is Faith. Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Good
thank
night.
You.
today.